Fred Film Radio is joining the Sydney Film Festival Australia.
This is Cristiana Palmieri for Fred Film Radio from the Sydney Film Festival, and I am in conversation with Thea Lindberg, Alina Grigori, and Eva Vitia. Good afternoon, ladies.
Thank you.
It's a great pleasure to be with you today. So just a little bit of context for our audience. We are at the Sydney Film Festival Hub, and Thea, Alina, and Eva just participated in a talk. Was a panel, actually a panel discussion with the moderator, and the theme of the talk was women in film, in particular European women in film. So we'll go back to the topics discussed during the talk later, because I really would like to start with a few specific questions about your films, the films you presented. So I will start with Thea.
Okay.
So you are the screenwriter and director of As in Heaven.
Yes.
As in Heaven is your feature debut, right? So congratulations.
Thank you.
A very, very interesting film.
Thank you.
And what I would like to explore with you is the angle from which the story is told revolves around the role of women in the 19th century Denmark's countryside and their role in managing family farms. And the story revolves around young Lise and her idyllic, supposedly idyllic, summer spent in the family farm. But then events take a different turn. So tell us more about Lise and her story.
Yes, so As in Heaven is actually based on a book that was written in Denmark in 1912. And this book is called A Night of Dying. And I read it not long after my own son was born. And, you know, of course, I was really taken in by the whole story about this mother who goes into labor with child number nine. And very early on, we learned this is there's some difficulties with this birth. But what I really was sympathizing with in the story, what really talked to me was Lise and the other children and how they are witnesses to what is going on and they feel they can do something to change the outcome and to change the destiny, but in reality there's not much they can do. And then this film is seen through Lise's perspective, where the book was more written in overall Godish voice looking down on the humans.
What I found very interesting in witnessing the story through the eyes of Lise is how important the relationship she had with her siblings was depicted in the film. Could you please elaborate a little more about this relationship? Like, Lise is the eldest daughter, but she really is part of the pack.
Yes, yes.
So I would
definitely
like to explore a little bit more about that relationship.
Yes, so they are eight children, and I think back then children were definitely left more alone to their own devices, and so they quickly became a pack. And because she is the oldest, she's the one in charge. She's the one who's responsible. If anything happens to one of the younger children, it's her responsibility to take care of them. So that also reflects on the circumstances that happened that night that changes her life forever, because I don't know how much we can say.
Not too much,
okay.
Definitely.
But things change for Lise. We can put it like that.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Yeah,
they definitely change, not necessarily for the better, but yes. So I wanted to also depict this, as you say, as they are at group. And then in the end, they are not a group anymore.
Yeah.
She's definitely singled out.
Yeah, and I think this comes out very well in the last scene of the film.
Thank you.
Excellent. So let's move and ask a question to Alina Grigori.
Hello.
Alina Grigori is director and screenwriter of Blue Moon. And is your first feature, right?
Yes.
Yes, so again, congratulations on a very good debut. And your story is a very powerful story of, again, a young woman, Irina. And Irina struggles to break family ties that prevent her to run the life she wants. Could you please elaborate a little bit on Irina's character?
She was very much a character that that you can find in my community, in the community where I was raised, not necessarily born, in the rural area. I was documenting a couple of girls trying to understand their stories, and they were talking about a lot of emotional abuse, I would say, more than any other type of abuse, a lot of manipulation. Only 2% of the girls in that in rural areas in Romania can pursue further education. So that was one of the main
2%.
2%, yes.
Wow.
Yes. So that was one of the main things that we wanted to spot on. I think probably the most important thing is that families are usually the one that interrupt this process of education, not necessarily the, I don't know, governmental setup. So,
and what's very interesting in Blue Moon, Alina, one aspect that I picked up, and it goes back to the question I've asked Thea just now, again, relationships. I was really interested in exploring with you the way you depicted the relationship that Irina has with her family, in particular the cousins.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they are at the same time the roadblock for her to pursue mm-hmm. her life, but at the mm-hmm. same time she can't escape.
Yes.
So could you please elaborate a little bit in that willingness to be independent, but really failing to deliver on that, on
yes.
that willingness to be independent?
We tried to build up a singular character through the eyes of all the members of the family and, let's say, the abuser, the sexual abuser. So all the other characters are one main huge character that should oppose to her dreams and to her perspective. And I meant to say something. Can you?
My question.
Yes.
The relationship that Irina has with the cousins,
yes.
the male cousins in particular.
Yes. Why I chose them to be cousins and not necessarily father or brother or husband was because I didn't want this to be a story about domestic violence
yeah.
or to go into that direction. I wanted it to be a story about the whole family opposing to her wishes. But what was probably most important was the fact that she's a victim, so she goes through
yeah.
this triangle of being a victim, an abuser, and a protector in the same time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really got that from a few scenes when Irina is really a complex character because she wants to escape, but at the same time, maybe she doesn't want
yeah,
to escape.
Yeah.
And I think this is depicted very well in the film.
We're working a lot on the fact, on understanding what the victim triangle is, because
yeah.
it's a whole theory about it.
Thank you, Alina. And then we move to Eva Vitija, director and screenwriter of Loving Highsmith. So Loving Highsmith is a documentary, so it's not a feature, and is a fascinating journey to explore the life of Texas novelist Patricia Highsmith, whose cinematic stories of really suspense and thriller captured the attention of famous directors, including Alfred Hitchcock. and they wanted to make films based on those intriguing stories. I'm very interested in asking you about the angle that you have chosen to tell this story about Highsmith, because it's a very interesting angle for such an intimate documentary, in particular because you have used her personal diaries. So could you please elaborate a little bit on that?
Actually, it has a lot to do how I started the research. I really started with reading the notebooks of hers. I went to the archives because she has been living in Switzerland her last 13 years or so. All her unpublished writings are based in a Swiss archive, and I really started a bit with that. So what I discovered there was a woman that was completely unknown to me from everything I had known about Patricia Highsmith. She has this very strong image of being a very dark and somber character as well, not only a writer of crime, but also this very negative and somber character. And I discovered a completely different woman. And when I scanned these, like, deciphered her notebooks, because it was all in handwriting, it was a huge work to do that. I found that there's two topics that are really on top of every other topic. That, of course, she writes about everything she sees in her life, about all her experiences, her thoughts. She also has a lot of quotes of other authors, what she's reading and stuff. But the most important topics were really like love and writing. That was the two topics that was the most important. And it was quite clear then from the beginning that I would do some kind of love biography, because I thought it influenced her writing so much, how she had experienced her own past in love, because she's been a lesbian in the born 1921, yeah. And she basically lived a double life, as all lesbians did in that time.
Like Willa Cather, yes. From the United States.
Yes. And I think there's a lot of topics in her writing of double identity, of like changing identity or unsure identity, which is definitely come from this very personal love background.
Like a metaphor of her life in disguise.
Absolutely. And it's very hidden as well, because she takes male characters, and there is often also two male characters somehow being attracted to each other in a way that could be homosexual, but it's not clearly. So that I think these topics, when I wrote the notes, were so important that I thought this would be my main angle, my main focus on the story.
Yeah, this identity in disguise, in a way, which, as you said, it really comes out very well in many of the male characters she portrayed. The your documentary opens with a scene from A Stranger on a Train with these two male characters, and you wonder.
Actually, her first idea of that story was an idea about a relationship. It was really not like. It was not yet clear that they would swap murder or any crime thing, but it was the idea to depict a very strange relationship somehow, and this was the starting point. And then, of course, there's this other topic which is very strong, which is guilt.
Yeah,
and I think she did not write about murder, but she did write about guilt, like having done a murder and having to live with guilt.
And the consequences of that action.
Not being catched or something.
Yeah.
Or her most famous character, Tom Ripley, is someone who doesn't have a feeling of guilt, which was for her some kind of utopia, of course, because she herself had always some kind of feeling of guilt just by being who she was, because it was not allowed.
Sure. And I think guilt is something that permeates your documentary and both your films, right? Alina and Ter.
Definitely.
So guilt is around.
Yeah, it's interesting.
The female guilt.
Female guilt. Ter, I have another question for you. Mm-hmm. In As in Heaven, landscapes and the slow pace of the narration plays an important role in capturing the audience into the story. Would you like to elaborate on this? It's something that I picked up, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought that landscapes and the pace of the narration are actually main characters in the film.
I think you're very right about that. I mean, it was definitely a conscious choice, and it is the landscape, but it's also the little animals, the insects, the feeling of life. That is a main character, and in a way it was how do I interpret the divine, and the way that I could express that I felt was through nature. So whenever Lisa is trying to communicate with something bigger, with God, all this is expressed through the nature, and so is the life, but so is also the death.
Yes, indeed, because I can see a common denominator between the landscape associated with both life and death, right?
Exactly. Yes.
And I think Lise has a special connection with the land.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the first scene of the film when she wanders around the fields, it sets the tone,
yes,
of the story in relation to the landscape, right?
It does. Very much, yeah.
Thank you, Thea. And Alina, landscape is not a big character in your film. I wouldn't say so. But what is really interesting in Blue Moon, I want to go back to Blue Moon. Can you explain why the title, the reason for the title, Blue Moon?
Oh, of course. There's a song that I thought it's in Romania, but it was actually in a village, a very small community. And it's a ritual. My grandmother would take us out to have this dance. You would like take something that is a very important belonging to you. It could be money or jewelry or whatever. And you would put it on your head and or on your private parts. Yes. Like you'd have to rub it on your body, on your private parts, and you would look at the moon, and there are some lines, the lines that Maralina says, like blue moon,
right? Yeah,
yeah. And what it says, it's like, make this change be a fortunate change. I mean, the change that I'm feeling right now, make it be the good change. So that's why, because Irina is trying to change in one way or another, and I thought it's a good... But I was very shocked to find out that nobody actually knew about this. And I was thinking, maybe it's something only my grandmother did. You
know? Is it only for women and girls?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Only for women, yeah.
Only so for women, okay.
Yeah, they go out to the moon and they just do this.
Okay.
So that was the reason.
Like a rite of passage.
It is,
so your
it is,
friend
yeah.
invented this tradition.
Maybe it was just your grandmother. Are you going to do it to your children? Your daughters?
Yes, I should. Yeah, I really should do that.
Don't break the tradition.
No.
It's a beautiful song. Yeah.
So going back to what I was saying before, Alina, landscape doesn't play a big role in your film, but a location plays a big role in your film, which is bed and breakfast that the family run in the countryside. Mm-hmm. So could you please tell us a little bit about the location? How did you choose that location?
It was mainly because when we documented, it was about girls in the rural area in the mountains. But even if it wouldn't been that way, I would have definitely chose a location that should promote freedom and that should show, should present this idea of freedom, because I felt as if it's very important to show that she feels suffocated in a very free environment, actually, in an environment where you think she's able to run away. It was a very hard decision because that's a beautiful location that no one was able to actually see. Because on trying to build up on characters, we decided to, every time a character becomes the victim, to have the focus on that character and to have everything blurred around, so unsharped. So being a film about victims of abuse, there is a lot of blurring that beautiful mountain view.
Yeah. Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Eva, going back to Loving Highsmith, I would like to go back to the diaries, if you don't mind, because your documentary offers a very intimate narration of Patricia Highsmith's life. And what I really find interesting is that you complemented the narration with excerpts from her unpublished diaries, with her own handwriting appearing on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I found that really intriguing. So how did you know about the unpublished diaries, and how did you manage to have access to them?
It was a bit a longer journey, actually, because I couldn't access them from the start.
it took about 2 years until I could was able to access the diaries. I could read the notebooks, because she has always had notebooks for her more professional things and diaries for her more private things. And fortunately, she didn't keep those categories so strictly.
Lucky you, Emma.
I could read all the notebooks before, and they already contain a lot, which is also in the diaries.
Mm.
And also there was two events when somebody had read her diaries and she didn't keep the private things in the diaries anymore because she was so afraid that they could be read again. She put them in the notebook. So,
which actually, is in the film?
Yes.
In the documentary.
That is also in the documentary.
Part, yeah.
And she talks a lot about her own life also in the notebooks, where she also puts all the professional ideas she has. All the first drafts of all stories and of all novels and stuff are also in the notebooks. And I really went through these notebooks first. So this was actually my probably more important source than the diary. Because when I was able to enter the diaries, my shooting started soon after. So I had to send an assistant to do that. And I have, of course, read everything she excerpted. But it was this huge work of, you know, really like deciphering sentence by sentence. You couldn't read through the whole thing. But I think it was also a good thing that we were able to look at the original things, that we were not, you know, given like a selection yet, because we could really select the things that was interesting for us. And I think that was very important. And the handwriting that is now in the film was not planned actually in the beginning.
Oh, right.
No, that was not, because I thought it was too much. We had already, you know, we had photos, we had different kinds of film material, and I thought it was a bit too much. But it happened to be so important in the whole development to decipher this handwriting, and it has a very special character. Every handwriting has this very special character, and
indeed,
I think for a writer it's very nice to see how he writes and how it looks, although you can't decipher it when you see it on a screen. It's too difficult.
Yes, but it's very engaging to see the handwriting appearing on screen.
Yeah.
It was a very good way to add a very intimate touch to the entire narration.
Yes. It's like you are being there, sitting with her at her desk and see how things develop.
Mm, so exactly.
That was a bit the feel too.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you, Eva. I have now same question for all of you.
Mm-hmm.
What was the motivation to tell these stories? Why did you want to tell the story of Lise, the story of Irina, the story of Patricia Highsmith? Thea, let's start with you.
Yes, I think I already touched upon it in the beginning when we talked about the film and what drew me in. But it really was this story about Lise and about loss and about trying to find your way in life and about losing faith in God and trying to find meaning and all those emotions and themes connected with me. And
so are these themes that resonate in you personally?
100%.
Right.
Yes,
so it's a very personal choice.
Yes, and I think, and that is the only way I can work. I only work personally. If it has to resonate with me, it has to be something when I feel like I need to tell this story, I need to dive into this and communicate this. That's the only way.
That's very interesting to know, because it add another layer of personal, emotional touch to what you tell, because it's not a story that you depict on the screen for the audience, but something that comes from within you.
Yes, I'm very drawn by human despair.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I can relate to that.
Yes.
Alina, your motivation to tell Irina's story?
First of all, it was because I was part of that community and I was probably the only girl in that village that got further education. So it's a story that I felt it's very unfair and we should let it out there in Romania. The fact that, as I said before, only 2% of the girls get education there, pursue further education. So, and yes, that's a very personal story for me because those are still my friends. I mean, those girls who are now, I don't know, raising their children and taking care of their parents and not pursuing further education are my friends. And it's an important topic for Romania and for the world. I think that was one of the motivations. And of course, it became very personal since the moment it happened. Since the moment I could see that they were dropping school year by year, I could feel that they were... Mm.
Yeah, indeed, a very important topic, especially when we look at other parts of the world, such as I was watching a program on Al Jazeera in relation to what's happening in Afghanistan to women who can't pursue further education, not even further education, like elementary education.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes we assume that is something that affects some areas of the world, but probably not.
Mm.
I mean, in the heart of Europe, this is happening.
Yes.
Mm. And we are not talking about decades ago. We are talking about
the present.
The present.
Yes.
Eva, your motivation to tell the story that you portrayed in Loving Highsmith?
Well, sometimes I find it really hard to answer that question. It's like if you've been asked, why did you fall in love with somebody?
It is true. Much like that question. No, that's exactly what it is.
And you only know maybe if you are already divorced again. And
yeah.
And I'm not yet divorced. No, actually, I really fell in love with that character because she was so mysterious to me. Mm. And I had so many questions about her when I could read those diaries and when I met her lovers and friends and her family. I had so many questions because the picture that was depicted of her, she was, of course, a famous writer, and I knew her books before. And the picture was so different to what I discovered after that I always had this great big question. How is she really? Who is she? Why did she become so different in the end of her life than where she started? And why is her public image so different to what I encounter in the whole research, for example? And it was really like those questions pulled me into the whole story and pulled me through the whole story. So I didn't really know why. I was always asking myself, why should I, as a, you know, Swiss filmmaker, why should I make this story about Patricia Highsmith? And I'm very different to her, but I could always connect to everything she was thinking about, and I always understood her own thinking. So I thought it's very important to paint a picture of a woman also that lived a life so different to many lives in that time. She was really a very free
spirit. Yeah.
And she lived as she wanted.
Yeah.
Because she couldn't connect that with women in general. She just thought of herself as being a man. She did what men did at that time.
Yeah.
She traveled. She bought houses. She went to Europe. She bought houses. She had a very free sex life. She just took what she wanted, and
lucky her.
Of course, it was all covered up because it was lesbian sex life or a bisexual sex life as well. But I thought that is, and I was really astonished why there was no film yet, because she's very famous and there's lots. She has inspired a lot of films.
But
there was no really big documentary about her, and actually I just wanted to tell a story of a woman that is being very different to a lot of pictures of women that we have seen already. That was kind of motivation as well. And she's just such an interesting, inspiring character.
Yes, indeed. And talking about women, let's go back to what I introduced at the beginning of this interview, the panel.
Mm-hmm.
that took place a couple of hours ago here at Sydney Film Festival, because your films, As in Heaven, Loving Highsmith and Blue Moon, have been included in the Sydney Film Festival section Europe Voices of Women in Film. And this section includes 10 films by European women directors. And this program really champions women-directed films, celebrates the talents behind them, and tackles gender inequality. So during the talk, a couple of topics related to feminism, women in film, and also female versus male characters came up. And I would like to explore with you a couple of the topics explored during the talk. First of all, the idea that female filmmakers make female characters versus male characters. What do you think about that, Thea?
I do think there is a tendency that most female directors do have female characters. I don't think it's necessarily something that has to be done, of course, just like men can tell stories about women. And but I tend to, I have so far had female characters, and it's because I think I can relate to these women, and it is just the stories I've been wanting to tell about these exact characters, and my next film has a male character. But what was exactly the question again?
you answered the question beautifully. Like the idea that female directors usually portray female characters.
I think they usually do, and just the same as male directors.
Yeah.
And for so many years, we've had so many films about men and their struggles, and because they have been directed by men.
Yeah.
And I think, for that reason, if for nothing else, you know, I think it's important to have women directors who actually tell stories about, sometimes women, sometimes men, but we see their gaze.
Yeah, and an interesting thing that came up during the panel discussion, Thea, was the fact that you were surprised that your film was described as a feminist film.
Yeah.
Because your original intention was to tell a story about Lise and her life in 19th century countryside Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just interesting that sometimes film critics, journalists or commentators, they picked up something that wasn't really there at the beginning.
Yes, which is exactly true, because when I started out making this film, it was just because I was drawn to the story and to these characters, and it was only later on that I realized, I'm hitting right down in this time of the new feminism, and it's speaking exactly that language, and I look like, I'm on the barricades, and they're like, those poor women, they should have education. And of course, I agree with all these things,
but
it was never why I set out to make the film. It wasn't a political argument. It just is something that you could also take out of the story.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
And Alina, in your film as well, education, women education plays an important role. But without moving to this topic that came at the talk, what do you think about the idea that female directors mainly depicts female characters?
I think it's about time to do that. I don't have a problem with that, doing that on purpose, in a way. It didn't happen to me exactly how Thea said. It didn't happen to me, but I think it's very normal for us to be drawn by something that is so personal as your own sexual identity. And I feel it's so obviously, in a way, and normal for a male to have stories about male characters and then a woman to have stories about. But I think the focus should be, it definitely should be on the way a woman addresses, as I said in the panel, addresses to the public, because I don't think we're yet prepared to accept a woman's point of view towards storytelling. The public is not, it's not prepared, because they were so many years fed with a type of storytelling. And I think that's the main that's the main thing that we should focus on.
Do you think, this is a question for all of you, do you think that the Me Too movement has played a role in shaping this narrative that female directors do films about female characters?
No, I think it played a role in us being promoted more.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Not necessarily in the way we're telling the stories.
No.
More about the promotion.
Yes, yeah. I think so.
Which is fine.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And yes, it has spread. There's a whole new awareness. And it seems like now it's such a political thing. Now,
yeah.
And, you know, and now it's almost like a law. You know, like in Hollywood, they have to hire amount of women.
Like affirmative action.
Yes, so. And I know a lot of like male directors now who are like, so furious. I'm just like, hey, it's about time. It's fine. Like, you're fine. You'll be fine. Don't worry. You'll get back.
Exactly.
Now it's going to be this for a few years, and pretty soon it's going to be something else. You know, it's going to be a racial thing or non-binary, you know. But right now we are in the women's time, and it's okay.
Absolutely. It was about time.
Yeah.
Eva, your perspective on this?
Actually, when I think of topics that I want to do, it's more like I find it, sometimes even people come to me and ask me if I want to do something about something, someone. And when it's again like an older white man, I'm just not so interested. I just think we have enough. Just had enough of that.
Yeah.
And I'm just more attracted by female stories, probably. But it's a very unconscious thing also. I just find it more really less boring to have this female perspective because there's been so much about male perspective. And so when I think of, for example, people I would like to depict, I won't always do like biographical films, but then it's always the women that attract me because they have not been told yet. There's also a lot of very famous persons, and you think, of course there must be films about them, but there is not, because they're female. So I think it's also an opportunity for us to, you know, really tell new stories.
Yes.
And that's about what is interesting about it, that it's really like new stories. We focus on other things, on not only female things, it's also about new storytelling when we tell stories of women.
Yeah.
Because probably they have a different experiences, not being so individual sometimes, but more family-oriented or group-oriented, or they have other emotional networks as men, and this classical hero story somehow doesn't work anymore. And I think this is also something interesting to explore new storytelling in those stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And we really need a new perspective, because as Thea was saying, we have been living with tons of male directors depicting male characters or depicting female characters from a male perspective.
Exactly. Yes.
So we really need a shift, right? I have another question for you all, actually. I would like, if it's possible, to have some insight in your new project. Do you have any new project in your pipeline? Thea, would you like to start?
Yes, I will start. I am working on my next feature film. I've just finished writing the first draft, and it's based on a myth from the Faroe Islands about people who die and become seals, and there's a lot of sorrow and love and despair and
intriguing.
Yeah, and loneliness. So so this is the next feature film, and it is, as I mentioned, it's a male character who is the main character, but there is a point in the film where it actually shifts and it becomes the woman's story.
Oh, wow.
It starts being the man's and then it becomes the woman's story.
Yeah. Oh, this is an interesting trajectory.
Yes. Yes. And in the beginning we see her through his eyes, and we are told who she is through him, but once we are with her, we realize she's not the one that he has told us she is.
So it changes completely perspective.
Yeah. And
so that is a
seductive way, I would say.
You could. And another project I'm doing, I'm working on a TV series about the big witch hunts in Europe in the 1600s. And with specific focus on Denmark, which was a very... Yeah, I know Italy was old. Oh, Spain was actually a very...
Well, Spain, Italy and Denmark were at the top of that game, I
think. They were. They didn't hold back. So it has been a very interesting process for me to reading all the old accounts and trials from back then in the church books and setting up this whole story around this. And there's nothing, I mean, of course the characters are fictionalized out of all the different stories I've come across, but there's nothing in it that did not happen.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, you're like, this is crazy. Yeah. How could this happen?
In the 16th century.
Yeah.
Which is a long time ago, but not so long ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Alina, your new projects.
So I'm now working on, I have the first rough cut of the next film that I've been working on, which is about why we need fiction to deal with our own realities. And then another project I'm working on with the actors, is a film about why how political debates can drift apart families. And it's a film that I already have the cast for it. It's really very nice actors from Romania, and also Melissa Leo from the United States.
Oh, wow. Two projects for the near future.
Yeah. Hopefully in development.
And for you, Eva?
I'm very in the very start of my new projects, because I've just finished this film. One is more personal. It's you can't see that in the radio, but I'm a bit fat.
You're not fat.
And I would say
voluptuous.
Voluptuous. Okay.
Or curvy.
Yes. Curvy. Yes. Thank you. Fat.
I want to do a film about the relation between fat and sexuality, because I've been, you know, dealing with expectations of society, how sexuality should be as a fat person my whole life, basically. And I find it very interesting what society connects with fat persons, and what the reality behind may be, what kind of beliefs and also religious beliefs are still going on in those topics. Nowadays we talk a lot about health and what is healthy, what shape you should be to be healthy, for example. But I think it's very strongly influenced still by some religious beliefs of what is the good life you can lead, and what you can expect from that also sexually, for example. And I think the reality is also very different. Mm. It's influenced by much older prejudices from women
stereotyping,
but also some older beliefs of how's that called in English, my English, Fruchtbarkeits. These goddesses, you know, these very voluptuous goddesses.
Yeah.
There's also these older beliefs that influence all our views on those topics. And I think I just want to explore that on a very personal level, I would say, but try to explore the societal questions around that. And then there is this other idea about photo agencies. The situations for photo agencies has changed during the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. There have been plenty of photo agencies who were founded in the 60s by photographers themselves and owned by the photographers. And they have recently been bought up by bigger agencies, and they were shut down or bought up by... a lot were bought up by Corbis, which was an agency of Bill Gates. And then he sold everything to another agency, which is a Chinese agency, or to Getty.
Yeah.
And mainly there is now only just two huge corporations that own a lot of our public images. Also TV material, like for example, the whole 100 years of BBC is now owned by Getty. And it changes the situation a lot because we cannot use it maybe as we could use them before. And what does it mean for a society if, for example, the images of Vietnam War cannot just, yeah, you know, be shown as they mm-hmm. could be shown or something? It's something that really changed in the landscape, and I didn't see any other film talking about something like that. And I find it's very, it changes a lot for documentary, obviously.
Yes.
And I want to find out about that.
Yeah, because it changes the production landscape, really.
Yes, and also our historical images, how our historical imagery somehow changes a lot.
Indeed. So, ladies, we are running out of time because you are busy. You have things to do. So, thank you so much, Thea, Alina, and Eva, for your time.
Thank you.
And I've been in conversation with Thea Lindenberg, a director and screenwriter of As in Heaven, with Alina Grigore, director and screenwriter of Blue Moon, and Eva Vitilla, director and screenwriter of Loving Highsmith. And I'm Cristiana Palmieri for Fred Film Radio from the Sydney Film Festival Hub, and enjoy the rest of the day at the Sydney Film Festival. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.